3, 2, 1, hit it.
Chris Ronji, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called The Show.
Yeah. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Welcome in. It's Friday. It's gorgeous. And I officially did it. Guys, I wore a sweater every day this week. That was my goal, is to wear a sweater to work. Every day this week, John Hancock, Michael Kelly, and joining us on Friday, as they always do, Chris Ronji is still out, so Michael Kelly has kindly agreed to sit in with us all
day. And I kindly agreed to go home.
He did. Right.
Isn't it a little too early, though, for us to be thinking that this is what the weather's going to be like for the rest of the...
100%. It's way too early.
It's a head fake. I mean, so we've got like 12 seasons in Missouri.
Yeah.
You got winter.
Right.
You got faux spring.
Right.
You got winter, too. You got the flowers are blooming.
Right.
And then you get the frost.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you get spring.
Okay.
And then,
that's like a day and a half spring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get summer and then you get the false fall, which is what we're living in right now.
But this year we had about 10 days of the Sahara Desert.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of our summer death heat.
Yeah.
And then, now you're in the false fall, which is the season we're now celebrating. And then, summer again, summer two.
Yeah.
And then the fall. And then the winter.
Yeah, because usually when it's like weather like this, I know people who have pools are thinking of closing their pools down.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, I want to get the pool closed before the leaves come. And then by the time the leaves come, it's 100 degrees out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that climatological breakdown presented by Hancock and Kelly, you can continue to listen to us on 104.1 FM.
Or not. I mean, really, it's a choice.
Well, no, I don't think it's a choice. I think they would be ridiculous not to listen.
You can still listen on the OG, too, 1120 AM.
You can, absolutely, or the Odyssey app. Take us with you wherever you go. I inform the listeners I am a P1, which means a very good listener. I listen all the time.
Is that what that is?
That's what that is. Hmm. And I carry my phone with me. I listen on the Odyssey app. On the KMOX page on the Odyssey app, there's a microphone icon. You can leave us a voice message. You can also text us. Mm. I know Hancock and Kelly might be text magnets, like Brad Young. He filled in yesterday. Was
really?
A text magnet. 314-436-7900. You can text us there. You can call in there. You can also follow us on Twitter at ChrisAmyKMOX.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
Well, Ronj leaves town and they swoop in on Sheriff Alfred Montgomery. I think they knew his one supporter was out, so he was indicted on a federal charge. Meanwhile, St. Louis County Executive Sam Page pleads not guilty to charges that he misused public funds.
Here's a head scratcher that people will be talking about. President Donald Trump ends the security Secret Service detail for Kamala Harris. How about that?
And the Cardinals beat the Pirates 4-1. They split the series. Mizzou kicking off college football last night defeated Central Arkansas 61-6.
How about that? Now, Central Arkansas, would that be a community college or is that a high school?
Parkway West.
Parkway West,
they had an off night, Parkway West did. But they did score with, I think, 22 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter.
I think it's their alias or their, you know, nom de plume. And so they have to have a different name because I don't think Mizzou would play Parkway West if they knew.
Nom de plume, Paige.
Yep.
Mark that one down.
That's right. Your pen name.
Really? Amy. Is that what that means?
No, it's a
nom de plume?
Is
that French?
Yes. For a pen name, like if you wrote a book.
Yeah. Mark Twain, for instance, was a...
Samuel Clemens.
I tell you, she's a walking Tyrannosaurus over here. It's unbelievable.
She's got...
Well, how was your chat with Catherine Hanaway?
Oh, it was good. She's doing well, and... she's going to pursue the cases that Bailey had with Sam Page and Arthur Montgomery, it appears. So, you know.
Alfred Montgomery.
Whatever his name is. Alfred Montgomery. Who is that?
I know. I think he was in Bewitched.
I think that's exactly right. That was Alfred Montgomery. What's the guy's name now?
Alfred Montgomery.
Alfred Montgomery.
Yeah,
right. The sheriff. So she said she did clarify that she would continue to move forward and also said that it was a part of a a larger effort dealing with public officials.
Yep.
That's going on throughout the state. The other thing that I found to be interesting, I know Catherine. I fought her most of my adult life, but I know her to be a decent individual whose policies, like Hancock, are just messed up. But I was surprised she wants to do this. Politics is, particularly the job of attorney general, at least from a Missouri standpoint, kind of turned into a performative job. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to go sue China. We're going to go sue vaccine makers and kind of do some of the MAGA stuff. I don't know that Catherine Hanaway is that kind of individual, but it's become that kind of a job. And I'm surprised she wants to do it.
Does she want to bring it back to the job that it was meant to be, not just a stepping stone?
Well, what I think is most interesting about her particular background, because you look at, we've had this revolving door of attorneys general. Josh Hawley gets elected. He runs for the Senate. So then Eric Schmidt, who was at that time the state treasurer, former state senator, he then gets appointed attorney general. And he runs for the Senate. And then Andrew Bailey gets appointed attorney general. He had been the general counsel for Governor Parson most recently, and then he gets the appointment. Now he's off to D.C. Catherine Hanaway, the skill set that she brings to this, the experience that she brings to this, includes managing a 1,200-person law firm. The attorney general's office, effectively, is a 200-person law firm. And so I don't know that anybody with that particular skill set has ever ascended to this office before. Plus, she was the Eastern District of Missouri U.S. attorney for a good period of time during the George W. Bush administration. So she's been a frontline prosecutor, managed a prosecuting office, managed a law firm, and a unique and on-point skill set that we've not seen before. So I'm excited to see what she does.
No, I think, look, if we're going to have a Republican attorney general, Catherine Hanaway is probably one of the best, if not the best, that could have been chosen. I just thought of it from a personal aspect, you know, knowing her, that I, you know, getting into politics these days is different than it was even 5 years ago. And I'm sure she understands that reality.
Well, she's got a very good, I mean, Catherine, you know, her political pedigree is quite sound as well. And so she's been around the block many times. So I don't think any of this is going to be a shock to her. And I think she'll navigate the political waters as effectively as she navigates the waters there in the attorney general's office.
You know what the worst part of that job is, Amy?
What's that?
You got to live in Jeff City.
Well, I don't know that you have to.
You don't?
I don't know that you have to.
I mean, that you would agree with me that having to leave St. Louis to go live in Jefferson City would not be fun.
I was picking out houses in Jeff City back then.
Were you really?
Yeah. I had my neighborhood all picked
out. Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
I think they should move the capital to St. Louis.
Or St. Charles.
Like Indianapolis.
Or even Columbia. I mean, it's the part of the drive to the Jefferson City, whether you're from Kansas City or St. Louis, is that part where you have to get off Highway 70 and then you do that 50 minutes of, what is that, Highway 54?
27 minutes.
All right. 20. What are you driving? The DeLorean?
No, buddy. In fact, I obey the speed laws on Highway 54 because I've been pulled over a few times.
Really?
Over the years.
Ditto.
I've made that trip, I bet you,
what's that,
a thousand
town there?
Times.
Is that Fulton?
Well, you got Fulton. You got
And
Holt
if you
Summit.
Get busted in Fulton for speeding, there ain't no hiring anybody to fix that problem. Yeah. They make you show back up.
Because Winston Churchill was there.
That's right.
So
it's
you
an
all may
iron
recall,
dome or something.
You might recall that last week I had to give Wilma away.
That would be his dog.
The car, buddy.
Oh.
And so Wilma's frame was bent, and so I cleaned all the change out of the middle console there.
Yeah.
And so it set me on a quest, and I cleaned all of the change out of my other car.
Mm.
And then, wouldn't you know it, there's two little bowls in the kitchen closet there full of change.
Huh.
Emptied them out.
Uh-huh.
Upstairs in my closet, I got a little receptacle there full of change. So I'm emptying. I've got two of these gallon hefty bags. Not hefty bags.
Freezer bags.
Freezer bags, whatever you call them. The Ziploc deals.
Yeah.
I got two of those filled up, and then I got a little container filled up. And I looked at that sitting on the counter, and I said, that's $300. That's what I said.
Okay.
Yeah.
I even
did
told
any witnesses?
My father-in-law.
Must have been a lot of quarters in there. For that to be $300 in two freezer
bags. It was a vast array of different kinds of coinage.
Did you have any half dollars? Did you find any half dollars?
No half dollars. Okay. I did have a couple of little pence from England in there that they didn't count.
Pence?
Yeah. Whatever they are. The little guys. Pence. What do you call them?
Yeah, they're little, like they're pennies.
Yeah. So anyway, I spit them out. Mm-hmm. So I go to the Schnucks there, and I'm pouring my coins into the little...
Oh, you went to the Schnucks.
Oh, that's
the
bank. A rip-off.
You gave 6 to 7% of your money away.
10.9.
Oh!
It
think
was
about
worth
that.
It. It was worth it.
Really? You could have gone to the bank, and they'd given you all your money.
I didn't have one at my bank. I would have had to gone to Clayton or Maryland Heights to
How
do
can
that.
A bank not have a change counter?
Well, I'm just telling you, they didn't have one. So I go to Schnucks, and it's next to a guy that's filling out a voluminous number of lotto cards.
Mm.
And anyway, so I told Dad, I said, I got $300 here. It stopped crunching and counting, and it came out $296.48. Thank you very much.
Wow.
Thank you very
much.
That's
when you tell the people walking by you, hey, you got any change?
Did you have to give up 30 of that, or was that already with the 30
taken out? No, that was the total account. So, Schnucks got their 10.9% cut of that, and I walked out with the rest of the cash.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which was lovely.
Well, good for you. You got the immediacy of having that cash in your hand.
Yeah.
Now, last week, you were telling us this was going to be an exercise to teach young Tula.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I needed the cash to pay the the home cleaner gal. So
yeah, but you could give Tula a dollar bill or a $2 bill, and she would be just as happy as
Tula's
a $20
bill.
Tula's
leaving for Florida tomorrow.
Whoa!
And little vacation.
What a life this little one's living.
No kidding.
She hasn't even started school yet. She's going to the beach.
She did start school.
Oh,
she
did
she? Start school? Yeah. Yeah. She's in the second year of preschool.
You have to be potty trained for preschool.
You do.
Yeah.
Man, we were under the gun on that one.
Were you?
But so far, so good. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm really pleased about that.
Yeah.
Well, as Michael Kelly said earlier, Donald Trump has ended security detail for Kamala Harris. But on the highway of political conversation, John Hancock is a walking exit ramp. So we're going to take a break.
Hey, now.
And
that was an impressive little segue.
That wasn't. I think as segues go, that's probably like a 3 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
He's John Hancock, Michael Kelly. I'm Amy Mark Scores. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Michael Kelly, John Hancock, Amy Mark Scores with you on a Friday as we head into the holiday weekend, Labor Day weekend. And Michael, as we mentioned earlier before I went to break, some news this morning that President Trump has revoked Kamala Harris's Secret Service protection. So she did have a Secret Service protection that would stay, well, that went through July 21st, but then it had been extended by a directive that had not been made public, but it had been extended by Joe Biden for a year. But President Trump has revoked that.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on this move?
I mean, come on. I mean, it's petty, it's childish, it's immoral. And I mean, he's done this to other people that were cabinet members. This is this retribution campaign he's on. This is a former vice president. This is somebody that he spent hundreds of millions of dollars saying things about, riling up folks who may be inspired to do wacky stuff. And I wouldn't want that on my conscience if I was him. And I'm hopeful that Congress, hope in one hand and, you know, see what you get in the other. I don't think we're going to, I don't think we're going to see a Congress stand up. This is immoral and wrong. And I think it just, I don't know. I have even worse things to say, but I want to be appropriate.
What'd you get in the other hand?
I don't know. It was an expression my dad used to have, and it's not appropriate for the radio. Oh. Halfway through it, I realized it. I'll tell you off air.
I don't know what the protocol is for former vice presidents receiving Secret Service protection. I don't know if that's typical.
I believe it's 6 months.
Okay. Yeah. I know that.
But
former,
it can be extended.
I know that former presidents are protected for life by the Secret Service. I mean, it is petty. You know, in terms of his conscience, I don't think that's an issue for President Trump.
He don't have one of those.
And, you know, it's of all the things that have been, all the edicts that have been given so far, this one doesn't particularly
disturb me. But it's such, this one is so transparent to me that it's, and it's someone's, it's human life safety. I mean, come on. We all watched the ads that these folks ran on each other.
Sure.
This is not appropriate behavior. We can't protect kids in churches going to schools. But we're going to say that, oh, all these people are sane enough that they're going to leave Kamala Harris alone after everything that's happened. It's just so transparent that even as an opponent of Kamala Harris, how you can't look at this and say, this is immoral. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's transparent. Well,
it's certainly petty. And, you know, as I say, I don't know what the protocol is for protecting a vice president. You know, I mean, you can look at a number of decisions that have been, oh, let's go raid John Bolton's house. I mean, you know, there are a number of these things that have happened and transpired over the last 8 months that, you know, are precedent setting.
And so I know that everybody likes this. This is part of what the president wants, is us to all get exercised about this. This is a part of this flood the zone culture that they have where they're trying to overwhelm us with stuff. But what about Barron Trump the second Donald Trump leaves the White House? Does Bernie Sanders, as the next president, get to say, guess what, Barron's not going to be protected? I mean, it just, what are we doing? What point is this serving? You've beat Kamala Harris. Joe Biden's in your rearview mirror. Go work on your own legacy. And why to try to put someone's personal health and safety in jeopardy like this? Makes no sense.
Yeah, and it's frustrating too, because we do live in a different political environment right now.
Yes, we do.
And so much of the rhetoric is violent and existential. And that's a dangerous combination. We've seen attempts at the life of President Trump himself. So for Trump to make this move, it's petty and political, because I would say in our current environment, yes, we should keep this extended protection for a former Vice President Kamala Harris, who ran for the presidency against Donald Trump. Like, out of an abundance of caution, let's keep this. But I do think there's an element of this that is very much on brand for Donald Trump, who likes the strong man, who likes the mob boss. Because people say, oh, he's a dictator, he's a fascist. No, he's not. He's not Hitler. You have to be pretty bad before you're Hitler. He's not a dictator. He's not a fascist. He couldn't define fascism. Academics have a hard time defining fascism. What he is he loves the idea of a strong man and a mob boss. And what does a mob boss do? You stick with me, I'll protect you. What you don't want me to do is lift my arm of protection and leave you to the wolves. And I think that kind of harkens to this of, I'll protect the people that are on my side, but Kamala Harris isn't in my good graces, so I'm removing some protection from her. It feels mob bossy. And yes, it's his purview to, I guess, remove Secret Service. But
maybe that's what ought to change, right? Like, why would a president have, this type of authority to take away that kind of stuff?
Well, we're all going to find out.
From a former president and vice president.
Eventually, we're going to find out what the authority is for this, for calling the National Guard, for a host of things.
Firing a Fed person.
Well, yeah, with that, the lawsuit.
The issue there is
blood in the zone.
The courts. I mean, in our court system, by design, moves slowly because of the principle of due process. And so when the courts are the lone check on executive power, and that's where we are right now in this country, there is no legislative check on any of this stuff. And so if you're relying on the courts to be the lone check on excessive executive power, which, whether you like or dislike Donald Trump, it is inarguable that the exercise of executive power in this Trump 2.0 administration goes far beyond anything we've ever seen in the history of this country. So if you like it, great. If you don't like it, it is what it is. But it is inarguable that this is an excessive flexing of executive power. And the only check on it is the courts. And that's going to take time. Donald Trump will probably be out of office before many of these questions get resolved.
Well, and if you like it, okay, so you like it with Donald Trump. Are you going to like it with AOC?
No.
When we have President AOC and she exercises, you would imagine more. Because why wouldn't she continue to span the branch?
Which is why these cases have to proceed, even if they don't get resolved until Donald Trump is gone. Because we have forced now the courts to examine our constitution, to examine the the boundaries of executive power, and the courts are going to have to sort that out according to the Constitution. And I hope that those justices who have originalist bents on looking at the Constitution will apply that to these cases here, because an unchecked president of any party, an unchecked president is a scary thing. You need only to read the Federalist Papers to see exactly what the founders were alerting us to. And a lot of those things that they were alerting us to in the Federalist Papers are unfolding right now before our eyes.
He's John Hancock. That's Michael Kelly. I'm Amy Markscores. It's the Chris and Amy Show. We are going to continue the rest of the hour with Hancock and Kelly. Later on in the show, Pat Kellett, president of the St. Louis Labor Council, will join us, as will Dale Schilly, St. Louis SC Academy director and broadcaster, and Kurt Ringkamp, general manager of the Gateway Grizzlies. Michael Kelly, John Hancock, Amy Markscores with you. We shall continue, despite John's efforts, just a little bit more political conversation.
All right, fine.
We'll focus on the local. Let's start with St. Louis County Executive Sam Page pleading not guilty to charges that he misused public funds. Where do we go forward with that? He'll be in court next month, I believe. Is that how that works?
Well, yesterday he pled. Mm-hmm. We spoke today with Catherine Hanaway, the Attorney General.
Designate.
And she said that she has no intention of changing course on either of the issues that the Attorney General is pursuing in the St. Louis region. I think this now just goes into the long, slow process of the courts till ultimately there's some type of resolution or trial. And I probably will side with the theory that John has on how he thinks this ends.
Yeah, I think they're gonna negotiate a plea, and the plea is going to be they're going to drop the felony charges of stealing, and he will plead guilty to the misdemeanor charges of election whatever, and agree to step aside as county executive, and I think everybody will shake hands, and that'll be it. That's how I think this is going to play out. I don't think, and here's the thing, Sam Page can't raise money right now. And he's not raising money right now. He's got an announced opponent who is raising money right now, and that's Brian Williams, the state senator from North County. And if you can't raise money and you can't mount a campaign, you're probably not going to run. And so if you're not going to run anyway and you can plead this issue down to a misdemeanor and leave office and go back to being an anesthesiologist, which is Sam Page's trade, that's the most likely outcome of this thing.
And just to clarify, when you say leave office, are you talking about leaving office early?
Yeah.
Do you anticipate that happening?
I mean, I think that's more likely than not. But, I mean, I suppose he could reach a plea that does not require him to step down. But, you know, you look at the precedent here, and the most direct, immediate precedent is Kim Gardner, who the attorney general was pursuing. And she ended up pleading out, and part of that plea was that she would resign as the circuit attorney. So, I mean, if precedent is meaningful, we might see the same kind of thing here.
Across the river on the St. Charles side, St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman, maybe, kind of, we're not sure, might reconsider running for re-election. He first announced his plans not to run for a sixth term a couple of years ago in the summer of 2023.
Yep.
But now he might be maybe considering it. What do you make of this?
I'm surprised, to be honest with you. I know Mr. Ailman, independent of politics. I grew up in St. Charles. He and I go to the same church growing up, and he was a friend of my father's, and I considered him to be a friend. I don't agree necessarily with his politics all the time. I'm surprised he's doing it because this is a guy who's got a long history of public service. I mean, he's been a judge in St. Charles County. He's been a state senator. Mm-hmm. He served as the county executive. What is he in his ninth year of being county executive?
19th.
19th year of county executive. And when he announced that he was going to retire, I kind of believed him because I know him. I mean, he's given his life to St. Charles to this point.
And one of the reasons is that he has said the political environment has changed.
Yeah.
It's gotten uglier.
I wonder how much it's changed. Has it even changed past him? And as a friend of his, I'm surprised he's doing it.
Well, I'm very intimately involved in this situation. I had been had run a number of Steve's campaigns over the years, and when he announced his retirement, I began working for Jason Law, who's running. He's a former mayor of Lake St. Louis. He's a lieutenant colonel in the St. Louis County Police Department, ran the strike force that goes after organized crime and gang activity in the region. Great candidate. And so, you know, the incumbent says they're going to retire. People step up to run. Another person that's running is Bill Igel, who's the former state senator who ran for governor against Mike Kehoe and Jay Ashcroft just last year. And, you know, if Steve Ellman gets into the race, he's clearly a formidable candidate right off the get-go, and he's had the job. I don't know what this all portends and how things end up shaking out if Steve does get in the race. I'm surprised, have been surprised, that he announced that he's considering running. But it's I would think, having done that job for as long as he has, he's very vested in what's best for St. Charles County. And I know that that's what motivates Steve Ellman, is what's best for St. Charles County. And so we'll see how this all plays out. Filing opens in February. And there'll be a lot of, I'm sure, discussions and back and forth talks and a lot of decisions and a lot of various thoughts that people are going to have to entertain. And the only thing I know for sure is that it will shake out. And yeah, it's a big decision to make, you know, and retirement is, you know, it's not for everybody, I guess.
And over on the, well, let's go now back to downtown St. Louis, where Missouri State Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick found at a report that there is inadequate funding currently to make the necessary repairs at the Dome at America Center. So according to the auditor's report, the Dome needs an estimated $155 million in repairs and maintenance over the next 10 years. However, the Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority, the RSA, has a cash balance of $89 million as of December, which throws the Dome into this weird limbo that it needs extensive repairs. $89 million is nothing to sniff at, but far short of what the auditor thinks they're going to need to repair the Dome. So what is the future of that space?
I don't even think they have enough money to pull the thing down. Yeah. I mean, file this in the file of nothing works in this town. And it's just so depressing to watch. We've all watched the erosion of this building. Stan Kroenke wrote us a letter telling us exactly what was happening to this place, and that if, you know, what ultimately was going to take place. We were warned. We've, like everything, we just keep whistling past the grave here on some stuff, and we're going to have some real consequences. I mean, it's a giant elephant sitting in the middle of downtown. It is crumbling. They've got issues. They can't maintain it. I think we're going to go into triage mode soon, which is that hopefully we're going to pull it down and take a pause on whatever we're up to at this convention center and come up with a real plan to try to bring people back to St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty simple equation. If it costs more to keep that thing standing than it's producing in revenue, then you're throwing good money after bad at that point if you try and fix it up, maintain it, renovate it, whatever. Do you need that much floor space? I don't know that there are many, if any, conventions that come to town that actually utilize all of that or any part of that floor space in the Dome. Of course, you do have those four Battlehawks games every year.
And the Methodists.
And the Methodists. And the Seventh-day Adventists. But, you know, I would think that there's a more prudent use for that footprint of land than a big dome stadium. Now, it hosts some concerts, you know, I mean, I'll give it its due. But the bottom line is, if it's costing us more to maintain it than it's generating in revenue, then that's a bad deal. And it needs to come down and be replaced with something that will generate revenue for the city of St. Louis.
Yeah, I have a very bipolar relationship with the city of St. Louis, because I think on one day, maybe you go to a Cardinals game, or there's a race or a parade or whatever it may be, and there are people downtown, and you see Energizer Park. What a great facility that is. You look down Market and you see Union Station. You think, oh, this city is beautiful. And then on other days, you're walking home from the Cardinals game by yourself, and there are three other people on the street, except for me, because I left the game early. And all three of them make me kind of uncomfortable because I don't know if they're on drugs. One's bent over. One's just yelling. Or you drive around certain parts of town that just are the detritus of ages past. Like, yeah, it was great for a while, and now it's all run down and covered in graffiti and fences. And I struggle with feeling super hopeful one day and then super cynical the next day.
Yeah, I think that's right. Detritus, PJ, but put that next to nom de plume.
These words? Trying to make us look like nitwits over here. I feel like she's talking another language most of the time.
Well, detritus.
I got to do 3 more hours of this.
My doctor treated my detritus with, it was calcium pills.
Right. You can rub baking soda on it as well. It's an old one.
I do understand the feeling because we love this city.
Yeah.
Right? I love this city. I have very fond memories as a young lad of coming down to the city and Christmas time, famous bars decorated, and it's had moments of splendor even in mm-hmm. fairly recent times. Mm-hmm. You look at that blues phenomenon of 2019 and the parade down, and it has the capacity, it has the potential to do that again, to be that again. And I think we need some visionary leadership in the political and corporate worlds to really get hold of this and try and turn things around.
But I think we all have that, Amy. Look, I mean, we all have and do poo-poo on St. Louis and the region and a mm-hmm. lot of things that are going on. But I'll fight anybody who's from the outside who wants to come in and take us on, you know, because it's where we're at. I think the hardest part, as I've gotten older, is I've lived through a couple of rebirths where things were working, like Washington Avenue. And boy, it's almost a perfect synopsis of what we're watching with the dome. Mm-hmm. I remember that Senator Kit Bond got a huge Great Cities, Great Streets initiative. And it was to do this whole roadway down Washington Avenue. They laid the old style bricks. They even put lights mm-hmm. in the middle of the road. And we had the rebirth of what happened with the lofts, which brought me downtown St. Louis. And in typical St. Louis fashion, when it was time to repair that road, well, we didn't have the $20 million to fix that. So they just paved it over. Yeah. $100 million road project. You know, we have a dome that we had. We never had a plan to maintain that dome. And I think John's right. I think it comes back to a lack of leadership. I also think it goes to something that we sound like a broken record about, which is we're all in this together. This is no longer the city of St. Louis's problem. We've all are here because this city exists. No matter if you're in Troy, Illinois or Troy, Missouri, you are here in the St. Louis region as a result of this city. We've all got to find a way to fix it and make it better, or we'll just continue to deteriorate.
Yeah, and that's why, too, I think such a divided political atmosphere. And, of course, it's always been political, but we're not going to move forward. And I know Steve Ellman, speaking of the St. Charles County Executive, has said, as goes St. Louis City, so goes St. Charles. Might be a few years behind, but that's what's going to happen. You can't be a suburb or a region of nowhere.
Growing up, I grew up in St. Charles, which was unheard of, right? Like, that was, we used to have jokes made fun of us from St. Charles.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I know anybody in my life who hasn't moved out to St. Charles. You know, all the people who used to make fun of me, et cetera, have moved out to St. Charles, the population that's out there. And what scares me about the mentality of the political discourse that's mm-hmm. going on in St. Charles is they view the city of St. Louis and St. Louis County as an enemy at times. I'm not talking about our county executive. I'm talking about a lot of the people who are running in this populist agenda. You know, they're wanting to blow up city government, and I think it ultimately takes them out as well.
Yeah. What is that saying? Like poking out your eye to spite your face or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I will also say, if you drive around North St. Louis City, some of the most amazing architecture you will ever see.
Yeah.
And you drive around, and all I could think of is, how did we let this go? It's some of the most gorgeous architecture you've ever seen.
No question about it.
And that made me sad. And I think the one, you know, I was down the other day because there's housing developments along Shodo that they had been tearing down. And I guess they just started fencing in, and it was all graffitied, this housing development. And it just looked really bad. I mean, it looked like a city moving in the wrong direction. And I know they're going to tear it down, I guess, and and build something better. It's just that interim makes you feel kind of down. But we do need to work together as a city. And again, North City architecture is insanely beautiful.
Most of the buildings that were built 100 years ago in the city of St. Louis are awesome. I had a friend in from Dallas. I think I've told this story. We went to a concert at the Old Rock House. And I think at the Old Rock House, I'm making this up, but it says the building's like 120, 140 years old. When the guy saw it, he said, "We don't even have anything 40 years old in Dallas. Yeah. This is unbelievable." Like he's taking pictures of an old building because he's never seen old buildings like that. He's from Dallas.
Yeah, that's a great point. Michael Kelly, John Hancock, Amy Mark Scores with you. A few more minutes with Hancock and Kelly on the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Our question of the week.
Yes.
Is Bruce Springsteen overrated? Apparently, John Hancock has some strong feelings, and he voted in our question of the week.
I was scrolling last night, and boom, there it was.
Well, how did you vote?
Or is
your vote confidential?
No, it's not confidential. I voted with the majority.
Which is what?
That he is overrated.
Oh. Now, I didn't grow up a Springsteen nut, and I had Andy Banker is a Springsteen nut.
Yes.
And I know Springsteen nuts, people who are obsessed with
Reardon
them.
On the other station.
Yeah, I'm kind of that way with you too. Mm-hmm. Now, I
with
did.
Us
you. Thank you.
Yes,
thank
with you too. I'm that way with you too as well, and Bono. But
I'm that way with you too.
Here's the thing. About 5 or 6 years ago, I went to a U2 concert up in New York, and Bruce Springsteen had a one-man play on Broadway called Springsteen on Broadway. An ingenious name.
Yeah.
It was the coolest thing I've ever seen on Broadway.
What did
he do? It was a one-man show, and he tells the story of how he got into music and what his lyrics really mean, and it's a whole story. He talks about his mom and living next to the Catholic Church and yada, yada, yada. It was incredible. I think it's on Apple Plus or Netflix. It's worth some time watching it. But it made me a Springsteen nut. He is not overrated.
He
is in superstar status. Among the ilks of U2 and the Rolling Stones, Bruce Springsteen, I put them all up there together.
So when I consider whether an artist is overrated or not, for me, it's all about the music. It's about the quality of the music, the intricacy of the music. He's not a particularly good singer. And
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a distinct voice, I'll grant you, but it's not particularly... You know, if he weren't Bruce Springsteen, if he was standing out on the street corner doing the... probably wouldn't put a dollar in the box.
His songs are covered by so many people, and some of them even better than his originals.
I would think that would be an easy part.
Oh, my gosh. But, this is Hancock, not Kelly talking.
I'm just
keep
saying...
Keep going, John
I'm
Hancock.
Just saying that just on the music... Mm-hmm. I don't think he is in the upper echelon of pop musical talents. Now, based on the success, the sales, the image portrayed, all of those things, he's off the charts.
If I may take a subtle jab at you as a man
right
who likes
ragtime,
all ragtime music sounds alike, and therefore it doesn't have the subtleties and ingeniousness of music. That is essentially the argument that you just made about Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. You're bringing a 10 ear to the table, Michael, which I can appreciate.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that on a musical level, there are so many other artists that are Tracy Chapman, more interesting than Bruce Springsteen.
Tracy Chapman.
But she's got three, four songs. Bruce Springsteen's has a catalog of music that will be with us forever.
I think that's what he's saying, is she should be at the Bruce Springsteen level. But kind of devil's advocate, or I should say Springsteen advocate, but Bob Dylan didn't have a traditional beautiful voice.
No.
And he was a musical genius.
He was a lyrical genius. He was his lyrics. And I think Springsteen ought to be given his due for writing good
lyrics. Yeah, but I'm not sure that most people would say that John Lennon had a beautiful voice. He wrote good songs. He had a unique sounding voice.
He's
I don't think
genius.
It was beautiful. Of course, he's Bach. He's Beethoven.
Yeah.
Same with Paul McCartney. But, I mean, it's not uncommon for folks to have a unique voice that may not even sound great. A lot of people don't think Taylor Swift has that great of a voice.
She doesn't.
I think she has a good voice, but I like her song.
As much as we're poo-pooing Bruce Springsteen, I would 100%.
We are not.
Go. That's right, John. I started poo-pooing him, but then compared to Brad Young, it sounds like I'm the world's biggest Bruce Springsteen fan. But I would go to a Bruce.
Brad was hating on Bruce Springsteen
yes!
too. Well, oh, is this all you conservatives mad because he spoke his opinion about our goofball president?
No, buddy.
Come on.
I would go to a Bruce Springsteen concert. I would. I think
he'd would
be good.
Too, if
he'd
it
be
were
good
free.
In concert.
Yeah, if somebody gave me a ticket, I'll.
Hancock
I'm
and
there.
Kelly going to do two more hours with Amy?
See you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not sticking around.
I got important things to do, places to go, and people to see.
Speaking of one-man shows, Michael Kelly will be hanging with me.
Yes.
John Hancock is out the
Ta-ta.
Door. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.